Navigating daily life has become more difficult for many of us during this pandemic. For people with disabilities, this new reality is even more challenging and riskier. 90% of those who've been hospitalized for COVID-19 have some underlying medical condition, almost always one covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act. You've asked us many questions on this subject, and joining us with answers is NPR's investigations correspondent Joe Shapiro. No relation. Good to have you with us, Joe.
Hey, Ari.
Also, Jennifer Mizrahi is with us tonight. She is president of Respect Ability, a disability rights organization. Good to have you here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Joe, I know you've been reporting on the challenges that people with disabilities are facing in this pandemic. Specifically, you've looked at what happens to them when hospitals restrict visitors. What have you found?
So hospitals, of course, need to stop the coronavirus from spreading, so they make a policy, or sometimes the state tells them to make a policy to restrict visitors. And so that makes some sense. Unless the patient is someone who can't speak because they've got a disability, because of some dementia. And usually when they go to the hospital or to the doctor, right, they rely upon family or a support worker. But now they're in the hospital, they're alone, like Mary Henderson, a 63-year-old woman with Down syndrome who'd also developed Alzheimer's. She died alone in a Boston hospital this month. And her brother told me, he said, it made my heart ache that we couldn't be there for Mary.
You know, we've talked to doctors at hospitals who say their heart breaks as well over these policies, but they need to restrict visitation because, as you say, they don't want to spread the coronavirus. I mean, is there a best practices model here that hospitals can implement?
Well, here's what the critics of the policy say. Look, if you ban caregivers, you're making things harder for the hospital as well. Because if caregivers are banned, many elderly and disabled people, they're not going be able to make informed medical decisions. They're not getting the information that they need. That means they don't get the best care. There might be long-lasting harm. I spoke to a daughter in Connecticut. Her mother had lost her ability to speak and had lost her short-term memory. And now, currently, the woman is in the hospital with COVID-19. And the daughter says, look, if I could be in there in the hospital with her, my mother would be spared some of this extra pain she's going through. And yeah. NPR, by the way, we learned that there's a federal investigation that's been opened into a complaint from that family. And if Connecticut changes its policy to let the family in, that could become a guideline for states and hospitals around the country.
Interesting. All right. Well, we heard from many listeners on this question, including several who are blind. Let's begin with this from Gina in Charleston, South Carolina.
I am a totally blind PhD student living in Charleston, South Carolina, and lost my job due to the coronavirus. And as a blind person who's struggling to figure out how to get my unemployment and actually get access to whatever services may be available to help me through this, I'm wondering what the impact of this is on our people with disabilities nationally, and who is helping us.
That sounds really tough. Jennifer Mizrahi, I know you've been advocating for people with disabilities, particularly in this pandemic. Are there resources that you can share with Gina?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Gina is not alone. Even before the pandemic, only one out of every three working age adults with a disability had a job. But in this pandemic, we've been particularly hard hit in terms of job losses. So 20% of those people lost jobs. So that's now a million people with disabilities who just lost jobs. So it's huge numbers. We just did a conversation with 70 individuals who were blind. It was a Zoom call with 70 people who were blind, and we found that the biggest challenge was safe access to food. Many of these people are living in poverty, and therefore they use food stamps. In fact, 11 million people with disabilities in America use food stamps, but prior to the pandemic, only six states let you shop for food online. And when you're blind, it is very, very hard to shop without touching things and without people getting within 6 feet of you. So our website at respectability.org has a very wide range of answers to questions on how to apply for unemployment, whether or not people qualify for certain benefits, how to deal with SNAP. And we've been dealing with this issue of online purchase and delivery for food. And I'm happy to report that now 22 states do allow people who are blind and have other disabilities to use their food stamps for online purchase and delivery. So they don't have to be at risk from COVID.
That sounds like a great resource. We have another question here from Brooke in Florida who asks, how does a blind person deal with social distancing? And Joe, I imagine that a lot of people who depend on others to navigate as they move through the world are having trouble right now. What advice can you give to Brooke?
Well, that's right. And I asked a couple experts on this. So I got some advice from Haben Girma, who's a deafblind woman who is a lawyer, was the first deafblind person to graduate from Harvard Law School. And so she said blind people, like sighted people, they should stay at home as much as possible. And she says a lot of blind people are using delivery services to get groceries. They're taking classes and work meetings from home. But she said, if you go out, you take a quarantine buddy, a partner, a family member, a friend who can offer to be a sighted guide. But I also talked to Chris Danielson at the National Federation of the Blind, and his take's a little different. He says the problem is the rest of us, those of us who aren't blind, because he was talking about how it's a common annoyance for blind people that other people will see him at the crosswalk and without asking will grab
just
them.
Just take their elbow, right?
Right, take their elbow, help them across the street, which, you know, that person means well, but for a blind person, they're concentrating on the sounds of the traffic, on the feel of the street, so it's a distraction. And Chris says, even in this pandemic, when we're supposed to be practicing social distancing, that's still happening to him.
It's a good rule of thumb to ask first before you take somebody by the elbow. All right, and our next question comes from Brianna in Wisconsin.
I've had to let go many of my part-time employees due to the COVID-19 pandemic. One of them has received some disability assistance for years. The caseworker has indicated that even though they are now 100% unemployed, they cannot apply for any unemployment assistance because they can't be on both systems at once. Is that true, or is it possible for them to get unemployment assistance right now and maintain their current level of disability assistance?
Jennifer, can you clarify this for Brianna?
Absolutely. The answer is it depends. It's really complicated. In fact, the disability benefit system is so complicated that when Congress recently passed the new CARES Act, the $2.2 trillion package, and they gave people $1,200, they almost cost every person with a disability and government benefits their ability to keep their health care, because that $1,200 would have put them over their $2,000 asset cap. So again, I'm going to suggest people go to the Respectability website, to our news section that really has some details as to who qualifies for which program, if they're on SSI or SSDI, and what the numbers are. It's pretty complex. Even members of Congress frequently don't understand it. But the key thing is going to be for this person to get ready for a new job, because it's the unemployment benefits are a short-term solution. And, you know, upskilling and getting ready for a new economy and a new kind of role is going to be very important.
Okay, Jennifer Mizrahi, president of Respectability, and NPR Investigations correspondent Joe Shapiro, thank you both.
Thanks
for having me.
And this is the National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.